Welcome to Coffee with Kelly.
In this podcast, we empower you with the knowledge and tools to ensure safety in our schools and prepare for a safer future. I'm your host, Ethan Woodman, Product Marketing Specialist for Crisis Go, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Kelly Moore, School Safety Specialist for Crisis Go. And in today's episode, we'll dive deep into the power of effective safety leadership. We'll uncover how safety leaders drive new projects, make tough decisions, and hold staff accountable while emphasizing the importance of clear communication, preparation, and self-accountability. Together, we'll explore the crucial role that leadership plays in ensuring school safety and handling emergencies. Get ready to gain valuable insights on developing essential leadership skills, fostering a strong safety culture, and implementing effective policies.
Well, good morning, Kelly. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, it's good. Life is good. It's middle of June-ish, and schools, for the most part, are out. So all the little kiddies are out enjoying their summer.
So all the work's done, right? They can just head on out and forget about school safety for next couple months?
Yep, you can. No, you can't. Some people think that that's it. You know, school's over and we'll get started again next year when everyone comes back to school. But that's not the case.
When they say that, you know, school educators and all that have a break over the summer, that's technically not true. If you're really making safety a number one priority.
Well, that's true. But there are some, you know, the teachers themselves often have a 10-month schedule.
Oh, okay.
Most administrators do not. They have a 12-month calendar. They usually take the opportunity, since the kids and the teachers are off, they usually take this opportunity to take their vacation as well. But they still have a lot of work to do to get ready for the next year.
I think if I was in that type of probably hectic environment sometimes, I'd probably need a pretty good break too.
Right. Yeah. And especially the administrators, you know, they're going all the time. You know, I've never seen a profession that has more meetings than that of the school administrators.
Really?
They are going from, it's crazy, which is one of the reasons it's very difficult to get time, you know, for safety stuff, is because everyone, every second is jam-packed with something.
So that kind of leads into our discussion today of basically what it takes to be a good leader, right?
Yep. Specifically a safety leader, right?
So my very first question to you is, are we talking to those that we, you know, consider, like, maybe they don't consider themselves a leader, but we're basically saying that no matter what, you're a leader? Or are we specifically talking to those who are like actual appointed leaders with leadership titles?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So we're talking to both, right? Because, you know, we talk about safety, specifically about school safety being a shared responsibility, right? Yep. But that shared responsibility is also a shared leadership responsibility. Mm. So it's not just waiting for somebody to say, oh, it's time for you to take step A, B, and C, and then you do what you're told. It's understanding what needs to be done, and not only doing it yourself, but getting others to comply with those steps or those measures that need to be taken care of. And so we're talking about the formal leader, primarily the ones who are appointed as safety coordinators, safety directors, those who by their current role, like principals, assistant superintendents, coordinators, and the district leadership, they have safety responsibilities, whether whether or not they're designated as a safety coordinator or a director of safety. They have the responsibility of safety within their building. So those are the ones we're primarily talking to, but we're also talking to those who need to take a leadership role in the actual safety, like helping your neighbor teacher, the one teaching next to you in the building or the classroom next door to you, helping them understand what they're supposed to do.
Okay. So you had a, you kind of hit on a little bit, but the definition that you've put in your one of your most recent blogs was leadership is the ability of one person to influence others to do what is necessary because they want to do it.
Yep. So difference between a manager and a leadership role, right? So a manager says, I have these many tasks and I need somebody to do it. Okay, you do it, you do this, you do that, you do this, right? And then in a couple days, I'm going to check on you, right? Or you get the micromanagers that check in every 30 minutes. Hey, you got that yet? You got that yet? That doesn't necessarily align with the leadership principles. And when we're really talking about leadership, it's our ability to get somebody to understand why it's necessary to do something so that they want to do it themselves, right? So when we're in the leadership role, the safety leadership role, we want people to want to do drills because they understand the importance of doing those drills and what is necessary to do those drills, not because Kelly told them to, or we have one coming up, but because they understand the importance of doing it and they want to participate. They want to learn. They want to know what they're doing wrong. They want to know what they're doing correctly. They really are taking an active role in their safety and the safety of their students, right? So those are the people we want in the safety coordinator positions, the director of safety or superintendents or principals, is they're doing this because they want to do it, not because they're being told to do it.
So if I'm a safety coordinator and, you know, I'm trying to get people kind of rallied around doing drills, you know, I feel like drills isn't like this really exciting, you know, thing that's happening that we have to do. So as a safety coordinator, how do I get like my people, as you will, to want to do drills, to be like excited to do drills? How would I go about kind of rallying people around that?
The first thing is trying to figure out what's stopping them from wanting to do it. Why is this not happening because you want to do it? Why? What's going on here? What are the obstacles? What are the barriers? So oftentimes they don't understand what it is that we're looking for or why we're looking at it. And oftentimes they're so worried about so many other things that are going on that they just don't have the energy to put into this. So what we really have to do is work hard on the front end and really get them to understand what their expectations are and understand why we're doing this and what the purpose is of doing this, and saying, look, you're not doing this to protect me. You're doing this to protect yourselves, your kids, your own personal kids that are at other schools, right? If you understand safety and then you have that conversation with your own child, that's, you know, a pretty high level purpose, right? So once we start getting into purpose and understanding why and understanding the, like I said, the barriers and the fact that this is in many cases very foreign to our practitioners, our teachers, our students, our administrators, our even some of the safety people, this whole concept is kind of foreign to them. But once we get them the knowledge and once we get them understanding how simple it is, then the other things kind of melt away. Time is no longer a barrier because I can do it quickly and correctly. But if we're just going to try to try to get through it as quickly as we can so that I don't have to suffer anymore, then that's not the right way. We're doing something wrong. And it, generally that's going to point back to leadership because that message was not conveyed to them correctly. The purpose, the mission, the expectation, the responsibilities probably was not communicated to them correctly or sufficiently.
So definitely, it's definitely important for those safety coordinators or those who are in charge of the safety processes in a school to be effective leaders.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. It's getting people to want to do this. And it's not just with the drills, it's the whole safety culture, yeah. Right? You know, there should never, ever, ever be a case where you have one of your teachers, one of your administrators, or one of your safety team members that says, this is not my job. If you have somebody saying that, they're in the wrong position, right? Or you need to correct that. Because it, as we've said, shared responsibility, shared leadership responsibilities there. If you don't understand it, you better find some way to get there because you're making a lot of money as a principal or as an assistant principal or as a school safety coordinator or a director of school safety or whatever. You're in these leadership positions. You're making a lot of money to make people understand that.
So my next question, I think, would be, you know, obviously, I would imagine, you know, the assistant principal and the principal are, you know, organizationally higher leaders than your safety coordinator. So if I as a principal am kind of seeing things not go the way that I would envision,
So let me stop you real quick.
Okay.
So generally speaking, yeah. The safety coordinator is technically a higher. In the hierarchy is higher because they're at a district level.
Okay.
But that being said, most of the time, they don't have the authority to go in and tell a principal what to do.
Interesting. Okay.
Right. So, and forgive me for interrupting you like that, but I wanted to make that clear. So we talk about the three pillars of school safety, right? Policies, systems, and people. The policies give people authority to do certain things, right? Most of the time, safety coordinators are at a district level because they're there to help all of the other buildings, the principals and assistant principals, with the safety within their schools, their individual schools, right? But the policies aren't sufficiently established to where the school safety coordinator can come in and say, hey, you need to get this done, which can cause a lot of delays or issues within what really should be a mandate. And I had this issue and I wasn't going to fix it. So I just did the best I could with what I could, is, you know, I half jokingly told people I had the best managerial job in the district because I had nobody who worked for me. And if I had a principal who didn't want to do something or was reluctant to do it or just refused to do it and didn't comply, I had to go to their boss and convince them. Right. And I had a boss that was an assistant superintendent. I would go to her and then she would go to the superintendent over that particular principal or school that was struggling. I could oftentimes correct it myself. I'm not saying every time I had a problem, I just never dealt with it. I dealt with it until they were still non-compliant. And then I would talk to my boss who would talk to their boss, right? Which isn't the right way to do things. But oftentimes, principals by culture have complete autonomy as to what goes on in their schools. And so they have that, but they don't have the expertise in the safety realm to really, unless they're good effective leaders to begin with. If they're struggling because they're micromanaging their buildings already, they're going to struggle with safety as well. But the reason I'm saying this is, one, your policies should align with the expectations of what authority is needed to run the safety program and who is responsible for getting it done, right? So, and here's an example of why this is super important. If something happens that the district administration, the superintendents and the cabinet at the district level expect Kelly, safety coordinator, to make sure that all of the schools are running at a high level of safety. If that's their expectation and they don't give Kelly the authority to make sure that he can do that, and he has to jump through several different levels to get there, then Kelly's not responsible. Does that make sense?
I think so. Yeah.
So if something happens, and as long as Kelly's documented everything, then Kelly can say, I have zero authority over that person. That's this person, and they were notified, and they didn't get it done. So it's not me. So from my experience, and one of the things I learned while I was there for that short period of time, a couple of years, was that if Kelly were king, the director of safety, if you have one of those, if you have a coordinator, a safety coordinator, those are two different levels in the school structure. Either or both of those should be cabinet level people. They shouldn't be the person who has to play telephone with all of the other district administrators. There should be some level of authority at that level for the safety coordinator, one, to pass their message on to everybody. And if they want to pass that message on down to their, that's up to them. But the safety coordinator should be a cabinet level person who can bring that safety culture at the cabinet level and have it filter down to the building level.
So the next thing I want to talk about, Kelly, is, so we're in the season of basically the school year is coming to an end, and they're going to be looking at what they can improve on, what systems can they add, or what projects do they need to look into for the coming school year. So can you talk to me why strong leadership is a requirement when scoping new projects?
So I don't know how many times I've been involved with scoping a project, a safety project, where the school project team has no idea what the school purchased. So safety leadership should be involved with identifying the problem. What do they need a solution for? And then looking for that solution and making the recommendations for that solution based upon it, their alignment with their problem that they're trying to solve. And they have to scope out. And when I say scope out, they need to make sure that the project aligns with their solution. If you just buy a product and then hand the product to a product team and they have no idea what that product does, or why, or what problem it's solving, then it's going to flounder. It's just going to, you know, wave in the wind, and people aren't going to be bought into it. They're not going to have the personal buy-in into this. And that's why it's so important that when we're talking about leadership, we're talking about, what do I want my solution to look like? What was the problem? What does the solution look like? And how do I get that product implemented all the way down to the end user, whatever that end user is? I understand it, but it seems silly to me that we have in our process, when we contact customers, we have, once in a while, we'll get safety people involved. But here's the diversity of many people who are on our not only on, but in charge of our the implementation of our solution. IT people, communications people, facilities people, business people, somebody who missed the meeting and got assigned this as a project because nobody else wanted to do it. And I mean, that's just to name a few. And rarely is this the actual safety person who has the ability to make decisions on how that solution is going to look. And so we've had some very sophisticated districts where we would be talking with their project team, and not one person on that project team could make a decision. They had to take the information, the question, and go back to somebody else who they discussed it, oftentimes for a couple of weeks because they're busy, right? And then they would bring it back and say, okay, they want to do this and this. Well, this and this might generate a couple more questions, and they can't answer those questions. So you see where I'm going with this, yep. Right? And so when you're scoping out a project and you're creating your project teams, and regardless of the system, you need to have people within that meeting that can actually make decisions that are meaningful for both safety and the solution, right? And that's part of leadership in scoping this out, and that whether that's safety leadership or district leadership, whomever that is, somebody's going to have to make a decision on how your system is configured. And you need those people in that room when the project is being scoped so everyone understands what's necessary. Because many people who start the meeting, I've seen it lots of times, and again, it's irrespective of what the meeting is about and what the system is about. And this is the first thing that they ask. I was assigned this project. This is the first time I heard about it when I was told I was going to be the project lead on this. Can you run me through what you guys do? Right? And somebody's already spent money on here.
Oh, man.
And school safety, as we've come to learn, is not something that you just check a box and say, okay, I have this video system. And you get the video system up. If you don't have people monitoring the video system or some sensors embedded, AI sensors embedded into video, the video cameras do very little in school safety, because all they're good for then is to find out what happened, not to prevent something. Most people think, throw some video cameras up. That's good security. And I've always had this argument to that, or this conversation with them about this. We know cameras are not sufficient to prevent crimes. We know that. We rarely admit it, but we know that in every bank in America, there are video cameras over every teller. Yet we still have armed robberies.
Yeah, you just go in and you just wear a mask.
Right? Right? Or some people don't even care.
That's true.
They just don't care, right? They just do it. Oh, I'm gonna wear sunglasses. Okay, you wear your little sunglasses. But they know they have a good likelihood of getting away with it, unless you have some way of monitoring that 24/7, whether it's a security firm or whatever, or some other AI, artificial intelligence, or sensor embedded into that video, that if certain things are observed on video, it sends an alert. Unless, then the camera is not going to do you any good. But you should know that before beforehand. Why are we buying these cameras? If we're buying them as a preventative tool, then we need to also add monitoring and or embedded technology.
I feel like part of being a good leader is being able to delegate well. So if you're, I feel like you're in that leadership position and you're trying to figure out those systems and you don't understand fully what you need to make sure those systems are doing what you intend them to do, then you need to be able to communicate with people that do understand how those things work. So like you said, you know, like IT people would probably be able to give you a pretty solid answer on if things are going to work the way that you plan on them working.
Sure. So this goes back fundamentally to the concept of unified command.
Yep.
Right. So unified command is everyone who has an interest or a potential factor in a solution for a problem needs to be sitting at that table, right? In incident command, there is rarely a time, I'm not saying it doesn't ever happen, but there's rarely a time where the leadership says, go solve this problem without any input, without any discussion, clarification, anything like that, because the leadership is the person who is person or people who are responsible for the solution legally and morally, right? So they're going to have somebody in there that understands their desire to solve this solution. They're going to have those experts in that room. And when we're talking about safety, school safety, then your school safety leadership and your district leadership should have a seat at that table. Somebody who can make those decisions so that you don't have to run around and take 3 weeks to make what should be a fairly simple decision.
Mm. Yep.
Right. So fundamentally, that's what we should be doing, is getting those people in there, communicating what we want. This is our solution to this problem. This is why we believe this is the solution. And this is what this solution should be doing for us, because we've already scoped it all out. Now, all you're needing to do is understanding the nuances of our district, but you already understand what the product is. Going into an implementation or onboarding meeting with no idea of what that project is a failure of leadership. And frankly, it's a waste of a lot of people's time. If somebody is saying we have limited time and you're doing stuff like that, you're wasting your people's time.
So this leads me to kind of the next thing that I want to just briefly talk about, is the characteristics of a leader. So we kind of been talking about like the role and responsibilities a little bit. So describe to me the characteristics of what you see as a good leader.
So really, it's somebody who educates their staff, right? There's lots of staff training, so people understand what it is that you do. Your leadership should understand what everyone on the team does. They don't have to be experts in it, but they should understand what they bring to the table. They should be good communicators. They should be good problem solvers. They should really be looking at the ability to train their staff so they understand. But in the whole scheme of things, what a good, especially a good safety leader should be doing is making sure that they have several people underneath them who can step into their role at any given moment. I call that succession training, and a lot of people do. I'm not the only one, but that's when you start looking at the longevity of your safety culture is when your safety leadership is training people, bringing them up to speed on everything, so that when I leave in a couple of years, because I'm an old guy, when I leave, somebody is there that can just walk into that seamlessly and start continuing with that, the building and maintenance of the safety culture, right? I've seen this many, many times, and I think most people have experienced this. When you have somebody who comes into a position who has a fair amount of passion, a fair amount of expertise, and you know, they're just little energizer bunnies, and they just get everything done and everything's working very well. And then they either get promoted because they were so successful at what they were doing, or they leave to a larger district or more money or something like that, right? And then the whole safety culture, safety program just falls apart because the champion of that system left. And leadership should be in this mode of making sure that when I leave, we don't have to start all over again. Making sure that everyone has it, right? Everyone understands and doing what's necessary there. And, you know, in some respects, that happened at my district fairly quickly. And some of that was the district leadership, the champion that brought me on board left, right, shortly after I did. The people there weren't sufficiently knowledgeable, let's say that, as to what needed to be done or who the right person was to hire. And some of the leadership really makes it necessary to make the right decision to keep people who are those champions in their positions. Now, I've never been in this type of work for the money. If I was a money person, I wouldn't have been in this type of work. Let's say that. Right. But there is a need to make sure people are paid what they should be paid at their level. And that's one reason I think like directors of school safety and safety coordinators should be at the cabinet level. And whatever that means to you, they should be making cabinet level money. But that's a hard decision. But that's a leadership decision. Are you paying your people correctly to stay there? Now, I didn't leave. Don't get me wrong. I did not leave the school because I wasn't making enough money. That wasn't even a consideration. The reason I left was to do stuff like this that I just couldn't do at that level. Yeah. I wanted to take what I was doing at the school and increase my reach and help more schools. And so I felt this was the better way to do that. And trust me, I'm not making significant money from that move. A little bit more, but not significant. But it is necessary for people to understand the responsibility, the education required, the experience required, and pay the people properly for that. Now, that's going to be up to leadership, but keeping people in their jobs is very important, and keeping them for a significant amount of time and removing barriers and obstacles for them is part of that. Sometimes finances is a barrier.
I could see that being a barrier probably quite often.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the other part of leadership is understanding the type of person you want in those positions and understanding that school leadership today is not a profession. School leadership, or safety leadership, I should say, is a unique set of skills based upon years of experience.
Yeah.
And some jobs translate better than other jobs. But understanding that this requires a unique skill set should require us to start developing school safety professionals as professionals, as a profession. If that requires a certificate, if that requires a degree in school safety, if it requires X number of years in other professions and then combined years with this profession, then we should do that. But we should understand that. We should easily be able to define what a school safety director looks like, what a school coordinator looks like. I can guarantee you, I can find a job description, minimum qualifications required for a school superintendent, what they're looking for. What are the characteristics? What are the minimum qualifications for a school superintendent? What are the combined education and experience? What is that for a superintendent? If you, and I've done this, it might be different now because I did it about 6 months ago. I asked for a job description for a school safety coordinator and a school director of safety. And I was appalled at what I got. Essentially, you need somebody who has 5 years experience in law enforcement.
And so why is that not a good thing?
Because there are so many different levels of law enforcement, and you're looking for a level of experience, not just law enforcement experience. And I think I've said this before. I'll say it now to be perfectly clear. I love our federal agencies. I am not a federal law enforcement officer. Oftentimes there's this sort of animosity between the two. And I get it, but I love our law enforcement, our federal law enforcement agencies, because they have the resources and the ability to really be in a supportive role. But generally speaking, there is very few federal law enforcement agencies who have ever been first responders to an incident. They have their own expertise. Secret Service is generally counterfeit and VIP protection. FBI is large-scale federal crime syndicates and things like that, bank robberies and stuff that protect federal assets. But the bank robberies are initially responded to by the local law enforcement. And then the FBI comes in and takes over or takes charge of that investigation because of the federal insurance requirement. So it's a federal crime, right? Kidnapping and things like that. But it's generally speaking, somebody calls them to say, hey, we had this happen. You need to come in and take this because the kidnapped victim is going across state lines or something like that, right? But very rarely are they first responders. So do they have a lot of law enforcement experience? Absolutely. Can they help you in a lot of things? Yes. Understanding emergency response and initial emergency management is not something they're well-versed on. High-level stuff? Sure. Being the first through the door at an active shooter of a school, a neighborhood school, not something they have a lot of experience on.
Yeah.
None of us really do, but
yeah,
because the probability is so low, right? We train specifically for that, and we know our schools and so forth. So we're going to have a little bit better understanding of that. We're going to respond to other emergencies, and we're going to work with our other emergency partners to really kind of understand how to manage that and respond to that. School resource officers, pretty low level. I love them. They have their function. They have their purpose. Should we have them in schools? Absolutely. Should we consider them our school safety coordinator? No. They don't have the experience in managing, putting plans together. They don't have the authority to tell sergeants what to do, or lieutenants, or captains, or whatever your structures are.
And in a couple of weeks, we'll have a very special podcast episode that will talk specifically on school resource officers.
Why in a couple of weeks? What's happening in a couple of weeks?
Because we are going to NASRO.
Huh. Isn't that fun?
And it's going to be a in-person podcast.
We're going to do bunches of them.
With video.
With video?
Yeah.
That's the first time we've done video, right?
That is true.
Yeah. So
you guys will get to see our beautiful faces.
Yeah. Right. But Ethan's talking about is the National Conference for the National Association of School Resource Officers is the week of like June 26th. Yep. In Indianapolis, and we're going to go there and be part of the exhibit. So stop by if you hear this and you want to participate in our podcast. Stop by and we'll have discussions. We're going to have some very directed discussions, but we're also going to have some sort of, I call it freestyle or open mic. Somebody who wants to ask questions about school safety, somebody who, you know, just wants to complain to Kelly about what he's talking about and challenge me on that, then that's what we're going to do there. We're going to also have a couple of guests from some of our partners, Seata Mobile. We're going to talk, I think it's been confirmed. I think we're just working on the time for Rudy Perez, the president of NASRO. So it'd be a good time for us.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good event for all of us, I think.
All right, so I think you know we've kind of hit on this before. I know we've hit on it before in previous episodes, but maybe talk a little bit about accountability. So the accountability, you know, holding your staff accountable. What happens if you train your staff well, or when you don't train them well enough, and then accountability for yourself as a leader?
When we're talking about accountability, what we're really talking about is the fidelity of what your program looks like. We can write out a perfect program on paper, but until we implement it and we can perform it to fidelity to the plan, it means very little. And, you know, we used to have these three ring binders that had all of our plans in it, had our checklists in it and everything. And people would say, oh, we have a plan. We have a great plan. This is what we would kind of do. We would go to the three ring binder, open it up, flip to the right, emergency. And then we would check off the checklist. Oh, we got to do this first, this second, this third, so forth. That three ring binder never went anywhere. It stayed on the shelf. And so the reality is we have three ring binders and checklists. You know, many classrooms have individual checklists for each class. That's great, but it's not what you should be training to. You should not be training to go to a checklist. You should be training people to know everything on that checklist. If they are new at it, they don't understand it, or they feel like they forgot a step, then they should be able to look at that and say, what am I missing during training, right? You shouldn't need that to respond to an emergency. That's part of the training. So when we're talking about accountability, we should be saying, here's your objectives for this drill, whatever drill it is and whatever those objectives are. You should make sure that your staff understands that. They should be trained to that. They should perform it for you and hold them accountable. Say, hey, I see you didn't do this. Why? Well, I don't know how. Okay, let's set up some training for you so you understand this specifically. This is what you need to do. Okay, hold yourself accountable by, if you say you're going to do something and you're going to follow up with it, they understand that you're going to do that, that you're going to make them better in responding to these emergencies. If you're going to put a system out there that you communicate, you train on it, you implement it properly. All of those things that you need to translate from the plan to applicability of what they're expected to do and their responsibilities. And if you feel like you are not holding, you're falling behind on something, you need to step it up. You need to figure out what's holding you back and work through that, whether it's developing a policy, whether it's causing your leadership to do their job or getting funding or whatever. But your job is to make that school safe. So you have to hold yourself accountable for deadlines, for making sure that the new teachers understand what they're supposed to be doing. You make sure that the people who have new roles for the following, for the next school year, they understand how those roles have changed in the aspect of school safety, in respect to school safety, I should say. So it's just making sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Your policies are necessary to establish expectations and so forth. You need to make sure that people are following those. And if they're not, then you need to bring them aside, just like a good coach, bring them aside, give them a little talk, and make sure that they understand where they're lacking. Now, the real purpose behind accountability, other than what I just said, is to make sure that everyone understands and they can do it without thinking about it, right? We've talked about this before, not practicing and just until you get it right, but practicing until you can't get it wrong. That's what school safety response is, that you're not going to get it wrong. You understand it to that level because you have, on average, in an active violence scenario, you have about 7 minutes and you have to get everything right. You're not going to have time to go to the 3-ring binder and figure out what scenario you have, what are your responsibilities. You're just not going to have that much time because you have people's lives in your hands. Understanding all of that, but here is the way that we have to, and one of the primary reasons we have to keep everyone accountable, including yourself, is while the probability is very low that you're going to have an incident on your campus, we know that we are going to have more incidences at schools. We just know it because they're not trending down, unfortunately. The problem is we don't know where or when. And we are, as I've said many times, 24 years beyond Columbine, where we should be doing and knowing so much more than we do at the school level about what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. If you are not holding yourself and everybody accountable and you have an incident, that is going to be the first line of the lawsuit.
It's pretty scary.
Right? And, you know, I know we don't like to think about litigation, but it's a fact of our society. And we see it all of the time that we're going to sue over this or over that. And, you know, a lot of people refer to what this concept of implied immunity is. In most states, a lot of government officials have this immunity, but that immunity does not typically doesn't go into effect and cover you if you are deemed negligent, right? And we could have this discussion with many people who are saying, well, as long as I'm not negligent. Well, if you don't have a solid plan, you're not meeting the expectations. We did a podcast and a blog on meeting expectations. If you're not meeting those expectations and you're not learning from the past 24 years of school incidences, and you think this, I heard this as early as last November at a conference where there was the conference was a week or two after a school incident, and the conference was in close proximity to that incident, and the primary spokesperson for the conference said this: the unthinkable just happened, and we need to start fixing that. And I'm just looking at my people, and I'm thinking to myself, unthinkable. I wonder what she's talking about. I knew she was talking about the school incident, but unthinkable? This is not unthinkable. This is something that we are well aware that is happening in our schools these days. It's thinkable.
It's preventable.
It's preventable. And we should be doing things to work towards that, not just saying, oh yeah, we have a 3-inch binder. And we could argue that there is some negligence in not having the basic security systems, communication systems, and protective measures in a school these days. Over the last few years, 3 or 4 years, there has been a bunch of money available to do just this, and it has gone unclaimed. There really is almost no excuse for schools not to have protective measures in place. And even if there's not grant money available, which there still is, even if there wasn't, then that requires you to budget for it properly. So that's why we need to keep people accountable, including yourself.
All right, Kelly. So we're talking about accountability, and you referenced, a safety plan. What are some the minimal things that I, as a safety coordinator or whoever's in that role, need to have included in that safety program in order to make sure that I'm keeping myself accountable?
Right. So what we're really establishing is the protection from this potential lawsuit for negligence, right? What do I minimally need to have at my school, right? And most of them don't include money to begin with, right? So you need training. So sure, there's a cost to that, but it's already built into your salaries and so forth for the most part. You need to train your staff, all aspects of your staff, everyone who's coming in new, everyone who's changing a role, everyone who needs remedial training as you're holding them accountable throughout the year. You need safety committees. You need safety teams for those functions that you are having within your safety plans and programs, threat assessment teams, so forth. You need to do drills and exercises on a regular basis, scenario-based, with purpose, and they need to be evaluated. Not every one of them needs to be evaluated, but at some point, you need to evaluate everybody within your district. And you're going to need help with that, I get it, but you're going to need to evaluate them and make sure they're doing it right. You need a good process improvement plan, how to make things better as you go. You need to document those. You need follow-up training and making sure that those people who are not up to your expectations and requirements, that they get that kind of training that they need. Assessments, gap analysis of not only your safety programs and systems, what are you missing? What do you want? What do you need? Those types of things. But also behavior assessments and staff evaluations on how they're doing things, and that's one good way of getting people to really take this to heart, is if your evaluations somehow are reflected in their annual evaluations and making sure that people understand that safety is, in fact, one of the important factors of their job performance. And we talked about this blog or two ago, a podcast or two ago, is about asset management, what assets are and how you manage those. And that the fact that every asset, whether it's a video system, whether it's a first aid kit, whether it's your training program, whether it's your safety certification program, your team certification and training programs, has an expiration date. You can't just put in a video system and check on it 20 years later. You need to regularly check on that. Your school safety plans, your program itself needs to be checked on a regular basis. Some states, in many states, it's yearly. And I think it should be yearly because there's so many things that happen every year in a school district, but some require it every 3 years or every 2 years, you know, whatever that mandate is. But for me, the best practice to protect yourself is yearly and make sure that everything is working as expected. We talked about this a little bit, and this one is succession training and planning, making sure that everyone knows the role, why they're there, and you need people who can take the next level of that safety hierarchy. Of course, threat assessment, behavior assessment, training, intervention, understanding of concerning behaviors, what to do with it, how do you find that data, how do you analyze that data, and so forth. And of course, that's just scratching the surface on what we need. But for me, I think that's a pretty good place to start. Having access control is a good place, and making sure that that works, visitor management, video systems, and so forth. But having those things in place don't work if your staff doesn't understand who's responsible for it, what it's supposed to do, and whether or not we can expect it to work when it's supposed to. So, you know, that's kind of the bare minimums for me. Some states are going to require a lot more, some a lot less, but generally speaking, you get those three pillars in place, your policies, get those policies in place, make sure that when you're doing your assessments, when you find something that has an expectation of responsibility or defines a role or something, that there's a policy in place to really give it some teeth and make sure that people follow that. So we're talking about policies. We're talking about putting all the systems in place. And most importantly, we're talking about the people. There is so much we can do that costs little or no money with people to keep our schools safe, to teach them how to recognize what concerning behaviors are and what they mean in the context of the discovery of that concerning behavior. A concerning behavior might not mean anything at the first grade level, but if somebody keeps on exhibiting that concerning behavior, whatever it is, multiple times where there's a little cluster of them, or they see an extended repeating of these behaviors, then we should take notice of that and act upon those. For me, that's kind of, you know, those bare minimums and what it means to hold us accountable and what we should have in place to really establish that we may not be perfect, but we're trying the best we can and we're constantly improving. We're constantly trying to make it better. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say this, a communications plan on how we're going to communicate with all of our stakeholders on what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how they play into that.
I would say that communication is really kind of the integral netting between all of these things. Without communication, every single one of these things falls apart.
It's the connective tissue, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kelly, I think that's all we have for today's episode. What do we have to look forward to? What's next episode? Give me a highlight.
It's really setting yourself up for success in the coming school year, making sure we're scheduling everything, making sure that our program is well documented, and what we need to do for building the best foundation we can possibly do at the beginning of the year so that we can just focus on refinement towards as we move through the school year.
Looking forward to it, Kelly.
Nazro. That's coming up soon too. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. That'll be good.
Well, that wraps up today's episode. Let's remember the significance of evaluating and planning our school safety programs as we prepare for a safer future. Take the time to identify areas for improvement, capitalize on the expertise of your staff, and prioritize recommended enhancements. With a few months until the new school year, it's crucial to strategize and create a comprehensive plan that covers every aspect of your safety program, from staff training to safety meetings, drills, assessments, asset management, and beyond. By elevating your leadership and safeguarding lives, you're setting the stage for a safer and more secure environment for everyone. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. And if you have any questions about what we've discussed, leave a comment on our website at crisisgo.com. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time on Coffee with Kelly, a discussion on school safety.